Good evening, everybody. So I'm really grateful that you all have gathered here today to meet somebody who's very special and very dear to me in my life in the last couple of years. I've met a lot of different swamis and spiritual leaders, and Ramnath Maharaj is by far one of the most impactful people I've ever met in my whole life. And I'm always humbled by his humbleness, and I'm always inspired by his deeply, deeply loving heart. And I can just share my personal experience whenever I'm in his presence. I feel like my heart is getting purified. All the old stuff in there just starts to melt away. And so I hope that you have a similar experience and you feel like your cup is getting filled and that you're being inspired to just be a better you, whatever path you're walking. And so I know you guys have been waiting for a while, so I'd like to introduce to you Ramnath Swami to talk to us and do this with some of the nice kirtan.
Thank you. Thank you. To do. the doors to this very special sacred place to all of us today. Could everyone hear? Can you wait longer? Can you hear now? Voice has been talking for 64 years. It has so much power. It is very special when we choose to spend our time in ways that nourishes and enriches our hearts and our souls, who we are, and who we're going with. Time is all powerful. Although it's invisible, you cannot see time, you cannot smell time, you cannot touch time. You cannot taste time. But time is in the process of extinguishing the sun, evaporating all the oceans, even the one just down the street. It will leave our little planet Earth as a little speck of dust. Not to speak of us. In Northern California, there are redwood trees that are over 2,000 years old. And there's a Norwegian spruce tree in Sweden that scientists claim to be 9,200 years old. And they don't think they live that long, actually. Because time goes rapidly for everyone relative to our particular body that we're in. And we may live 50 or 60 or 70 or maybe a little older. I was just earlier today speaking to my father. He's 91 years old. And recently, he wanted to take me to a place where he grew up. This is a strange story that you're not going to expect hearing from a Swami. Definitely. And he brought me to the south side of Chicago. And then he brought me a little further to a place called Calumet City. And when he was 5 years old, he was sitting on the steps of the courthouse. And a particular man came down who was considered a hero in those days. Not these days, but in those days he was a hero. And he came up to my father and rubbed his head and said, "How are you doing, kid?" And my father was speechless. And he would not let my grandmother wash his hair for several weeks. All his friends were touching his hair. That person's name was Al Capone. Blessed on his head. And then I was born a little later. Connection, but everything's connected all the way. Anyways, he was telling that story and he said, "It seems like yesterday." He said, "Where is time gone?" That was already something years. And then he took me to the little apartment he stayed. It's a really rough neighborhood, actually. And this lady was holding a baby, and she really didn't look like she liked us looking at her window. So she yelled out the window, "What do you want?" And it looked like other people were coming, like some of her reinforcement. So I said, "My father lived in your house 85 years ago, and here he is." And she said, "Really?" She said, "The landlord really takes nice care of this thing." And we became friends. But he said it was like yesterday. That's the mystical nature of time. However long we live, it always seems like nothing. But to speak of those big spruce trees, nothing can stop time. Even the greatest militaries cannot stop its progress. Money cannot bribe it. Beauty cannot seduce it. Even the greatest scientists and technologists have never been able to thwart the progress of time. And there's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Purana which tells us that with every rising and setting of the sun, we're all one day closer to death. But for those who choose to use their time for yoga, to actually make that spiritual connection with our true selves, with every rising and setting of the sun, we are one day closer to eternal life. A moment lost cannot be brought back for any amount of wealth. So our lives are really precious. Oftentimes things that we seem to have so freely, we take for granted. We don't really make an awareness of its value. Sometimes people, when we're just with them all the time, we get sick of them. We know they're helping us. But then when they're gone, then we really understand what we've lost. This is one of the great tragedies of life. That so often those things that we really should be valuing, we are not really focused on that value until it's lost. There's a well-known saying that youth is wasted on the young. Youth is so valuable. When we're in that stage where we can just learn, we have so much energy, we can accomplish so much. So much of that youthful energy is wasted on things that really are not favorable toward our real well-being. And oftentimes, instead of nourishing ourselves, we regret. So time is really precious. Tide and tide wait for no people. So thank you for giving your precious time to be in this gathering this evening. In Sanskrit, there is a word, satsang. Satsang means when people come together to really spiritually enlighten and enrich one another. To share God's grace with each other. To uplift each other. Because there's so many obstacles in this world. So many distractions. To actually find peace within yourself, you have to move through all the waves of distractions that are within our own minds. Can I give an example? Now, don't take it literally. Take it symbolically. The example is literal, but the details take symbolically. Because I don't eat fish. Not long ago, I was in a place called Jagannath Puri. Have any of you been there? Puri is one of the holiest places in India. It's considered one of the four dhams of India. Dhams means central holy places. And it's in the state of Orissa. It's on the beach. There's a beautiful ocean. It's the Bay of Bengal. And it comes down and merges into the Indian Ocean. So in Jagannath Puri, one day, it was actually early morning, I was staying right near the ocean side. It was a beautiful beach of sand, kind of like Long Beach. There's no surfers there. There's fishermen. And these fishermen are really simple people. They don't have much money. They just have little wooden boats. And I remember seeing this one fisherman. He has a little net. He has a wooden rowboat, and the waves are really big there. It's kind of like California. He was taking his boat. He was like on his boat, kind of like you would go on a surfboard. He was going like this and trying to bring it into the ocean, and a wave went, and just the whole boat flipped over and twirled around, and he went flying to the side. You know what he did? He somehow or other made it back to his boat, which was already washed up on the shore in the sand. And he took it and tried again. And then another wave came. And again he slipped over. He was on the ground and he was in the sand. And he came. For about a half hour, he was just struggling and fighting the waves. And it really wasn't easy. But he really wanted to catch fish. He was motivated. You know, that was not a sport. It was a necessity in his life. So somehow or other, after about a half hour of struggling, he got a little closer and a little closer, you know, in the ocean, and then another wave. But it didn't make him all the way back to the sand. It just kind of flipped him over in the ocean. And then he had to somehow or other grab the boat and turn it over again and get on top of it and another. And I was just watching, recognizing this person is really determined. He wasn't catching anything. And finally, when he got deep enough, the water was completely peaceful. He was just see, it was just happy. So that's the way life is. Especially our spiritual life. And actually every aspect of life. When the happiness, the fulfillment, and the purpose of our life is in a shallow state, we're really affected by the various waves that come in our day-to-day existence. And there's so many different types of waves. There's the wave of pleasure. But we know for sure when the wave of pleasure comes, there's going to be a wave of pain. Because the dualities of material existence are like two sides of a coin. There's heads and tails. If you say, I really like the heads, but I don't like tails. If you don't like tails, you have to somehow or other resist the heads too. If you take one, you get the other. And there's nothing that stops it from flipping over. So there's pleasure, and there's pain, and honor, and dishonor, and happiness, distress, victory, defeat, health, disease, heat, and cold. Different kinds of waves. One wave brings us up, and then the other wave brings us down. As long as the inner fulfillment that we have is very shallow, as long as we haven't really gone deep within ourselves, we are so much affected by the circumstances all around us. A mind that is not experiencing that inner fulfillment can be so distracted, disturbed by such things that really are insignificant. If we look at the whole large picture of our life, we see a little grain of sand, a little thing that's just a disturbance to us, but our mind can make it into a mountain. But when we're reconnected inside to the soul, to Bhagavan, and we see the grain of sand for what it is. So many times we see married couples get so angry with each other over things that really don't mean anything. I remember Mahatma Gandhi and my guru repeated his words. He said, if you want a marriage to last, all disagreements you have, just forget it. That's really not important. What's important is the higher principle of why we're together. What is our purpose? If we're not united on a higher principle, then little things are going to really disturb us and distract us. And that's the same with community. It's the same with our friends. It's the same with nations. It's the same with races. It's the same with religions. As long as we're on a shallow level of consciousness, there are so many stupid little things to fight about. So many details that are just appear to be enormous and absolute. When we actually are in that deep place, then we can actually really catch a lot of nice fish if you're satisfied. We're not disturbed by the waves anymore because of the depth. And this is such an important principle. Yoga or spirituality is not just about being more happy and peaceful myself. That's there, but unless we actually have that, then what is our influence in the world? And what's happening in the world? Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of the great writers of the Transcendental Movement, he has written that the reason the world is in such a corrupt, disjointed state and humanity is in heaps is because people are disconnected from their own selves. And if we don't make that connection, whatever solutions we try to make are really shallow. They're really superficial. Whether it's on a little local level or whether it's on a national, international, or universal level. Be the change you want to see in the world. To make that connection. Everyone is looking for peace. Everyone is looking for pleasure. And we're broken, seeking. But am I traveling around and I see so many different kinds of people that I'm not going to mention names tonight. I see people who have so much fame, so much wealth, so much power, so much influence, so much, you know, enjoyment with the most beautiful people in the world, so much sex, so much drugs, whatever it may be, so much talent. But they're so vulnerable. Just any little thing that goes wrong. They're vulnerable to so many temptations within their own minds that can really ruin relationships and get them in so much trouble. It's frustrating. True peace, if we find it within ourselves, whether we're little swamis with nothing, or whether we're farmers, or whether we're software engineers, or surfers, or yoga teachers, or whether we're in business, or politics, or science, or technology, or education, whether we're millionaires, or billionaires, or middle class, or nothing class, or like monks. Those are all details. We don't find who they are. That fisherman, his life was prosperous when he came into that state where he was deep enough to actually gain what he really wanted to gain. But to reach that depth within ourselves, it's not easy. It takes sincerity. It takes focus. And satsang, community of people who have common interests, is really important to help us remain focused. To not be discouraged by the waves of life. And to try to actually find that deep fulfillment we're seeking. Ananda Maya Vyashana. According to Bhagavad Gita and the Bhakti principles, the origin of that universal nature of seeking pleasure is the inherent nature of our true self, the Atma or the soul. Ananda Maya Vyashana. Things can give some pleasure to your senses and body, and a little to your mind, but doesn't last very long. But only love can give pleasure to the heart. Things will never give pleasure to the heart. Things usually distract us from what we're looking for. A little child, you can give them limitless toys, but if they don't feel the love of a mother and father, they just keep wanting more and more toys. Because they're looking for the pleasure of love in those things. And it gives them a little sensation, and then it frustrates them. And they get another one, and they get a little pleasure, and then they're frustrated. And the origin of that nature is the Atma's relationship with the Paramatma, the soul with the Supreme Soul. This is a universal principle. When you're touched by the infinite, eternal love of God, that awakens our love. There's a beautiful Sanskrit analogy. May I share it? It's really poetic. I really like it. But the symbol of beauty in so many of these ancient texts is a blue lotus flower. Have any of you ever seen a blue lotus flower? Really? This particular blue lotus flower, during the day, it remains closed, tightly closed. And during the night, it remains tightly closed. There's only one time the blue lotus flower opens, on the full moon night. When the rays or the beams of the full moon the blue lotus is so stimulated by those moonbeams that it blossoms, fully blossoms. When that full lotus is blossomed, it has the most ambrosial sweetness of fragrance, and it's considered the symbol of beauty for the whole world. It reciprocates with the beauty of the rays of the moon. It opens up and spreads its fragrance toward the moon. But what's beautiful is everybody around gets all the benefits. All the trees, all the insects, all the people are all intoxicated. Nice intoxication from that fragrance. And we're all seeing the beauty of the lotus and hypnotized by that beauty. So when we are touched by the grace of God, we call God Krishna, which means a very beautiful, beautiful, all attractive, supreme object of everyone's life. When we are touched by that moonlight of grace, then the love of our souls blossoms. And when it blossoms, our love, like fragrance, naturally spreads everywhere, to everyone. One Goswami, a saint from India, I recently heard him say that when a lady loves a man, and she puts on really nice perfume for him, everybody else in the room smells the perfume. And wherever she goes, everyone gets to enjoy the perfume. So in a similar way, when our love for Krishna awakens within our heart, it's so sweet, it naturally extends to everyone. When you put water on the root of a tree, it naturally extends to every flower, leaf, branch, and fruit of the tree. In the same way, when our love for God awakens, awakens within our heart, it naturally expresses itself with the sweetest fragrance of compassion toward all living beings. And that's the most beautiful thing there is. To receive that fulfillment and to share that fulfillment. That's the deepest place in our heart where that love is. And when we connect to that deepest place, Matras Parashastri Kunti Asitas Nasuka Dukada Adama Payano Nityas Kamus Padikshas. And the happiness and distress and honor and dishonor and pleasure and pain and the winter and summer seasons, we deal with them. But they can't reach that place that we're finding our peace. And ultimately, all spiritual paths, all religions, and all yoga are bringing us to that inner essence. I believe the name of the studio is Yoga Lucia. Yes. Can I pronounce it correctly? And I've heard about evolution. But I haven't seen any solution.
About climate change.
And obviously they're discussing what human beings are doing to Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. The pollution of the water, the rivers, the oceans, the lakes, the wells, pollution of the land, pollution of the air. And we can have activism, and we can have revolution, but can we make a solution? Revolution. That means cleaning our own hearts. Unless we recognize that the ecology of the world is simply an extension. The ecology of human hearts. If our hearts are so empty and so shallow that it falls victim to the toxicity. I left college a long time. To the toxic greed. As long as that greed is there, what is greed? Bhagavad Gita tells that greed and selfish passions are like fire. If you put some fuel in fire, the fire kind of seems like it's happy for a while. But as soon as that fuel is a little consumed, the fire becomes bigger and hungrier than ever. And the more a fire eats, the more it consumes, the bigger and more dangerous it gets. It's like I was born in Chicago. 1950. We used to hear a lot about the Chicago Fire. Probably you don't hear about it so much, but that's the way time is. Things get forgotten. But I remember my parents used to take me to downtown Chicago, and there's a water tower. And they would always proudly tell me, that's the only building that survived the Chicago Fire. When you grow up hearing that, you're just imagining what that fire was. A little match. It's nice. You know, you have candles there. Candles are very romantic and very soothing and very nice. But that little flame, if it just starts consuming too many things, it can become the Chicago Fire. It can burn down the whole city. In California, you have forest fires, yes. That's the way greed is. The more it consumes, the more it needs. As long as we have such a shallow existence that we just disconnect ourselves from living in harmony with nature, if we actually have true compassion within ourselves for other living beings, then it's natural that we're going to really be careful about how we treat Mother Earth. How we reciprocate the gifts of Mother Earth. Because every single person is dependent on the gifts of Mother Earth. And if we pollute one part, we're causing damage potentially in the future to so many. So why do we do that? Why are we so unconscious? Of some pollution within our hearts. So along with environmental sensitivity and purification, not to speak of equal rights to animals and humans being compassionate, it all really begins with making that deeper connection with ourselves, cleaning the ecology of our own hearts and our own minds. That's my interpretation of the evolution. Elevates. An actual solution. If we're not part of the solution, we're part of the problem. And naturally we think, well, things are so gigantic and so out of proportion, and I'm so little, what difference can I make? But even one little step can make a tremendous effect on the whole world. We should see it that way, because it's true. There's a beautiful story that we tell so many times because it's so simple but so sweetly instructive. Have all of you heard of Hanuman?
Yes.
Please raise your hand if you have heard of Hanuman. Raise your hand if you've never heard of Hanuman. Hanuman was a very famous person. But I'm not going to get into too many details, but he was really powerful by his love and devotion. He's a symbol of bhakti, his incredible will to show compassion to all beings and please his beloved Lord, Ram. So at one time, in order to rescue Sita, a simple lady, beautiful lady, consort of Ram, She was abducted. She was abused. She was kidnapped and she was held prisoner in an island. And Hanuman wanted to help Ram to bring her back. They were searching for months everywhere. Nobody knew where she was. But then they got a lead that she was in the island of Sri Lanka. And they were just at the coast in a place near Rameshwar in South India. Now the problem was, in those days, from where Hanuman and his people, his companions were, it was 800 miles across the ocean. So it's a long story. It's actually 24,000 verses, the story. But I'm only going to skip ahead and tell you a little. So they decided to build a bridge. 800-mile bridge. And they had mystical yogic power, where they could make rocks float in the water. So Hanuman was so strong, he was picking up mountains. That was his strength. He was truly a yogi. He was picking up mountains. You see, in those days, yogis were much stronger than bodybuilders. Supernatural powers. The real power is the power to control your own mind and senses. If you have that power to live with dignity, with integrity, with morality, with compassion, with devotion, that's true power. That's the power that can change our lives and the world. So Hanuman is picking up giant rocks and mountain peaks, and he was putting him in the ocean. And he was carrying this huge stone. And as he was walking, you know, on what had already been built as a bridge, there was a little spider. Now, how much muscle is in one of the legs of a spider? And I don't know if their legs or arms, they're kind of interchangeable. But that little spider with one of his legs was kicking one grain of sand at a time. And Hanuman had this boulder that was many tons in size. And the spider was in front of Hanuman's feet. And Hanuman didn't want to step on it. So he said, "Move." And Ram said to Hanuman, "No, in my eyes, he's doing just as much as you. You're doing everything you can. The spider is doing everything she can." Amagrahi. The real fulfillment of life is not the quantity of how much we accomplish. The real fulfillment of life is the quality. Quality of our consciousness, the quality of our purpose, the quality of our love, our compassion. That's the only thing really that touches the heart and the soul. It's the only thing really that is true in life. It's the only thing that sustains the ever-changing tides of birth and death. Is the connection we make with our own souls. The soul within the body is a witness, seeing through eyes and hearing through ears. The soul is beyond birth and beyond death. That's and supreme, all-loving, all-attractive. And through our meditation, through our chanting of God's names, through our verse practices, if we can somehow or other open our hearts just to receive that moonlight of grace that is all-pervading everywhere for everyone. If we can just be touched by that grace, then the blue lotus of our own souls, our own hearts, blesses. And all these lotuses are the same size as the human heart. It's not that if you're a billionaire, you have a big one. And if you're a little small, you have a small one. The nature of the soul's love is equal within all of us. And when we can recognize that within ourselves, then we recognize the equality and the sacredness of life, wherever there's life. That's the testimony of wisdom. That's the testimony of enlightenment. This beautiful opportunities we have within the time of our lives, moment after moment, to make choices, to deepen and deepen and deepen that connection. Individually, together, we can do wonderful. Clean heart makes everything clean. An unclean heart makes everything unclean. This chanting of the names of God that we have been doing is called kirtan. That's really its special feature. It's music. What is it called? Chandra? Type of music?
Genre.
Yes, excuse me, I've been in the Himalayas. It's kind of a type of music now. It's a genre type of music. Now, somebody was just telling me that they're nominated for a Grammy Award for kirtan.
Yep.
What?
Thanks, Neil.
Nominated for a Grammy Award for kirtan. Kirtan, you know, it can get you a little Grammys, that's nice. And it's beautiful music that can bring more peace to your stressed out life. And it can bring just happiness when we sing, we dance together in kirtan. All these things are beautiful. But the highest benefit of kirtan is it's like those moonbeams. The grace of God is flowing in those divine sounds of these mantras and opens the lotus of our heart. Chetodarpanamadarjanambhavamahadavagninamabha. Before it can actually touch our soul, first it has to clean our minds. The mind is like a mirror. When you look in the mirror, who do you see? I remember one time I was in a zoo. This was long, long ago, because I don't go to zoos so much. Long ago, somebody took me to a zoo. And there was one house that said these are the most dangerous animals in the world. There are tigers and lions and the most venomous snakes and really kept like behind glass, not even bars. And you go around the room, and then at the very end of the room, there's a big sign that says, this is the most dangerous with bombs. They just, they just eat. They eat food. And if they're not hungry and you don't bother them, they're nice people, actually. You honor that God, as long as they're not hungry. But when you look in the mirror, you see yourself. When the mirror is covered with dust and dirt and all kinds of other pollutions, for a long, long time collecting, that's all you see. And you think, that's me. I'm all these two. I'm this body. I'm a man or a woman, or I'm black, or I'm white, or I'm red, or I'm brown, or I'm yellow, or I'm male, or I'm female, or I'm Eastern or Western, or I'm from this religion or that religion or no religion. We're just all these designations we've collected. I'm rich or I'm poor. As long as we're thinking just in terms of the shallow conception that I'm just this external temporary stuff that's always changing, and all things in relation are mine, and that's the whole reality. But when you clean the mirror, you see yourself. You see the true nature of the self. When we see ourselves, we actually experience the joy, Satchitananda, the joy of the soul, the love of God. So this beautiful method of kirtan is meant to clean the mirror of the heart. Anandam buddhivadartanam. And as it becomes cleaner and cleaner, we reconnect with that ananda, with that inner happiness that's what happens when we make that connection is when we're in this world, we can study with the motivation of using everything we learn. We can work with the motivation of using everything we earn in harmony with the love of our hearts. That is true fulfillment. Whatever our role may be in society, we're motivated by compassion rather than greed and envy and arrogance and insecurities and fear. We're motivated by compassion, which comes from a fearless state within us. So this chanting connects us to that sacred space. In this wonderful Yoga Lucian studio of Dharma Shakti and Teresa and who else? Who else is here? Nobody knows. All of you know. And this beautiful space and your brother and friend Tuparam Prabhu was so much an inspiration for me and so many in this area, his family. This is when we come to a sacred space, it helps us to be aware of that sacred space within ourselves. And it helps us, empowers us to make the world a more sacred space. Thank you very much. this.
I have a question for you. You said something about heart. I heard a lot of that word. I heard a lot of the word heart. And you said like kirtan and heart. What is that? Like, what does that mean? I'm trying to figure out, like, how does that combine, like, the kirtan and opening the heart? Or
The word mantra, Sanskrit, man means the mind, or the heart. And Kriyate is to free, to deliver. Just like a few days ago, it was the 4th of July, Independence Day. And every country I go, they have their Independence Day. And India is August 15th. America's July 4th. And interesting, we both celebrate our getting liberated from England. But in England, they don't celebrate 4th of July or August. They thought, you know, everything was really good before they ran out of people wanted to just go off on their own. So independence is very relevant. And of course, you know, we really appreciate the freedom and, you know, the principles of equality and equal rights that are within the United States Constitution. I'm not a political person. But recently I was in Washington, D.C., and there was a memorial for one particular man, who I don't remember his name, I think Smith. And he was a mentor for Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and all these people, and he helped form the Constitution, but he wouldn't sign it. Because he said, unless there's a Bill of Rights, it's all theoretical. There wasn't a Bill of Rights then. Because he really believed in true equality. But you know, at the time when America was independent, after 4th of July of 1776, according to the statistics I read, 1/6 of the population of America were slaves. From Africa. This is after we got independent from England. Why? So we could have freedom from the tyranny of a higher power.
Jefferson was a slave.
But 1/6 of the population were slaves. And there was nothing done about that. So what does it really mean to be independent? And what does it really mean all men are created equal? On the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, there's a saying engraved in it from the Bible saying, everyone in this land has equal liberty, whoever they may be. Something like that. Independence. So much conflict, so much hatred, so many problems. Srila Prabhupada, our guru, he came to America and he said, we want to declare our dependence on God. And when we actually feel that dependence and humble ourselves before that higher power of grace, then we can actually recognize how we really are all brothers and sisters. And that's the thing of the heart. When we speak about love, we speak about the emotion of the heart. And the whole purpose, and all sorts of other intellectual exercises, is really to bring us into that space within our heart, to find that love, to find that compassion, to find that joy. And then through our knowledge, we try to reach it closer through our knowledge, and then when we actually make that connection, our knowledge, our wisdom is there to express it. This chanting is meant to actually awaken from within our hearts that which we're all seeking. Divine love. True compassion. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to have it? Oh, yes, yeah. Please.
What would be some foundational principles of creating a satsang, a community?
That's a beautiful question. What is your name?
I'm Jenna.
Jenna, are you from Long Beach?
Of course.
You know, I feel like I'm from Long Beach now. Jenna is asking, what are the foundational principles for community? Foundational principle, one important such principle is that there's a higher principle, as we were speaking, or a deeper principle than all the various shallow waves that are always causing us conflict and disagreements and disturbances. That we're actually focused on that higher, deeper principle. We agree. Unity and diversity. Atunti Vedavedava. That despite all our diversity, the human body has so much diversity. What is a healthy body? A healthy body is like a healthy community. Within your body and my body, there are so many organs and limbs and other elements. And each has its own color and its own shape and its own function. Can the pancreas do what the eyes do? Can the liver do what the esophagus does? Can the knees do what the kidneys do? Can the heart do what the brain does? Some of these parts of the body are really tiny. Some are big. They're different colors or different shapes, and they have totally different functions. Yes? But does any part of the body get arrogant and think it's just about me? What if the stomach decided, I'm the one that's getting food? Just like in politics, the rich people, you know, give some donation to the politicians as long as you do what I want, right? So the stomach is getting all the food. What if the stomach says, well, I'm not going to give it to you, brain or heart. You think you're so great, but now, you know, you're going to have to surrender to me. and doesn't give any food. The heart doesn't work, the brain doesn't work. If any part of the body doesn't work, the stomach is going to suffer. Every part of the body is conscious that its purpose is for the whole body. That's unity and diversity. And to the degree every part of the body is serving every other part of the body is healthy. And that's the principle of community also. The higher principle is the whole. So many inevitable differences will come. So many inevitable distractions will come. But we share a common awareness. And we want to enlighten each other. We want to find that deep place of spiritual love within ourselves. We want to share these beautiful gifts of kirtan and yoga and so many gifts that help us to unite on this higher principle. And we're there to serve each other, that we're there to help each other. That's the foundation of a community. That we agree on a higher principle and we try to live together on a higher principle. And that helps us to overcome the lower principles of the various egos and selfishness and anger and greed and envy that naturally come up within ourselves and with our inner relationships. They're small things. When you focus on the big thing, they're small things. But if we don't help each other focus on the big things, then those small things seem really big and insurmountable to overcome us. Does that answer your question?
Beautifully.
Beautiful question. Yes.
Is it the case that pride?
Can you speak louder?
Pride and ego.
My question is about pride and ego. That is a great obstacle to, I think, what you've been talking about is compassion and love. Can you conquer it? And if yes, how can you deal with this? If it's a short.
I'm not famous for speaking short things. I am this body. And because my body is what I am and you're different, therefore you become my competitor or my enemy or you're a threat to me. And those things in relation to the body are mine. Understand that's false ego. And then the pride that comes out of that false ego is the need, the obsessive need to prove ourselves superior to others. That's such an insidious tendency of a false ego. Small scale, large scale, individual, collective. We just have this need because of the shallow, empty nature of our hearts. We have to prove ourselves to be superior to others. takes the form of arrogance, cruelty, racism, fanatical, religious. So many isms. That's false ego. The real ego is that I am the eternal soul. I am the essence of life that's within this body. And when we recognize and connect with that, then we recognize every living being is of the same quality spiritually as myself inherently. And people are just in different stages of forgetting that. So in the false ego, we're proud of those things that make me better than someone else. That's false ego. Real ego is we become truly, when we're actually happy within ourselves, we become everyone's well-wisher. We want everyone to be happy. When we're miserable ourselves, we like other people to be miserable. Or at least we don't want them less miserable than me. Seeing the sunset on the shore of Long Beach. Look at this magnificent work of art. I'm so proud of you, Krishna. I'm so proud of you, my Lord. And when we see other humans do something wonderful, so proud of them for doing something wonderful. When we see a little bee carrying pollen for one flower to the hive, oh, I'm so proud of that little bee. In the real ego, there's pride. But the pride is not. The pride is an expression of our love, an expression of our deep appreciation. And everything we see that's beautiful in this world, every tree that's growing, increases our pride. Not, I'm better than you. That we're all connected to that same all-beautiful source. And there's no envy. And no arrogance. There's no greed. There's compassion. So in bhakti, we're not trying to extinguish the ego. We're trying to awaken our true ego. And to the degree that true ego is awakened, the false ego is no longer existing. Because it's just like a cloud. It doesn't really exist. It exists only in forgetfulness. It's a shadow. When you turn away from the sun, you see shadow. When you turn toward the sun, you see light. When you turn away from our own source, we see the shadow of the false ego. But when we turn again within to the light of Krishna's love, and we see that light everywhere. Was it so short? So grateful. Would you like to have a cure time now?
Yes.
May I show you a special yoga lotion asana? This is an asana that has been performed in kirtan for over 500 years. It was inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He taught us this because every movement of our bodies, every word from our mouths, every beat of our heart, every breath from our lungs can be to receive grace and to share grace. So as I'm chanting, you please fold your hands together like this. It's a mode of prayer. It's a mode of welcome, respect, gratitude. Receiving this divine grace that's coming from this beautiful sound. And as you chant, in response, raise your arms like this. It's a way of celebrating the grace we have received. And it's also like antenna. With this beautiful sound vibration, and now as we're chanting, we're transmitting it to each other and to the world and to the universe. And it's also like a child reaching out for mother. It's a way of humbling ourselves to receive the shelter. And we our Guru Srila Prabhupada has something called the Swami Step. Would you like to demonstrate it? Because you somehow are sitting there. Your right foot in front of your left and your left foot in front of your right.
We can all stand up for kirtan.
Namo Namo Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
great feeling. Like a child crying from under time of greatest need. Let us call out these holy dreams. Everyone together.
Thank you so much for coming. We'd like to serve you some food if you're hungry in the lobby. Is some fresh air. And there are some potato patatas and some za'atar, just like a Lebanese little flatbread pizza, and some rose tea. And Maria is manning the table, so she will serve you if you're hungry. There's also some cake from the ashram, some nice sweet cake from the ashram as well. So you can make your way to the lobby. But please, there's a table with books. Maharaj has written a really amazing book called The Journey Home. Has anybody in here read the autobiography of a yogi? Raise your hand.
You saw the movie.
For me personally, The Journey Home is like a modern day version of the autobiography of a yogi. And it's a really special book. We use it in our teacher training program, and I highly recommend picking it up if you're on your spiritual path. And you need some inspiration, I recommend picking up the book on your way out. It's $10 at the table. And you can actually come back in and meet Maharaj, and if you're lucky enough, he'll sign up for you. Do you have time to talk to some people? Okay, good. Thank you all. If you want to grab a book, you can grab one. If you don't have a book, you can just come up and we'll make sure that you get to meet Maharaj if you like. Thank you all for coming.
For you.
Hare Krishna.
My name is Marla.